Welcome to the second edition of the new, improved, revamped Front Stretch Podcast. Hope you liked the first one and you're back for more. I'm your host, Davey Siegel. You know the deal by now. We're going to be in your ears, on your screens, on your phones, computers, podcast apps worldwide, talking some NASCAR every single week. Last week, we had the incomparable Mike Neff. This week, another incomparable man. He's our wonderful, fearless leader at Front Stretch, Tom Bowles. Our majority owner is here. We're going to have some more talk about the 2021 season as a whole, plus some hypothetical Daytona 500 bets. Stick around. You won't want to miss this.
Buggity, buggity, buggity. Let's go racing, boys.
Let's drop the green on the second week of this new Front Stretch podcast. And for the second time in a row, we're not recapping the race that happened this past week because due to some scheduling conflicts, I'm going to be at Daytona, but the scheduling that we have there doesn't allow us to do it at Daytona. You're going to be listening to this after the clash, but we're not going to talk about the actual Busch clash. So I'm going to bring in my man, Tom Bowles, and we're going to briefly touch on everything 2021 this upcoming season. Last week, Neff and I, Tom, we talked about new teams, organizations, faces in new places, venues. What are your thoughts on the 2021 season, looking at it from a 30,000 foot view? Because it seems like there's a lot of cool stuff going on.
I think that 2021 is a year of change. And yes, we were supposed to start this year before a pandemic with the next gen car, but we still ended up with a lot of changes. We ended up with a lot of changes in the schedule. We ended up with a lot of changes in ownership and a guy like Michael Jordan coming into the sport. And we ended up with a lot of changes with drivers. You know, this is the first year that Jimmy Johnson is not a full-time driver since 2001. And that's a huge change throughout the NASCAR garage area. And I look forward to talking about that. So we've got a lot of excitement around the sport, a lot of interesting changes. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how the road courses change the game in terms of the championship and the drivers competing for the championship. And is this the start of a trend with Chase Elliott winning the title last year in terms of the next generation coming in? Or are we going to have our own version of Tom Brady, who just won the Super Bowl, come back in terms of Kevin Harvick at age 45 doing something that no one's done at his age and becoming the oldest NASCAR champion at, you know, 45, almost 46 years old?
Yeah. That's a good point. What do you think? You think we're going to have some new blood, maybe Chase Elliott going again, repeating as a 20-something-year-old, or you think we're going to have a 40-something?
I think that we're actually going to see a transition to the 20-somethings this year. I think that Chase Elliott has been knocking on the door for a really long time, and you just needed somebody to break through, whether it was Elliott, whether it was Ryan Blaney, whether it was, you know, any of these other younger drivers coming up through the ranks. And I think as we get into the year, I think there are a lot of really good drivers and exciting opportunities. Christopher Bell taking over the 20 for Joe Gibbs Racing. He was in a weird situation last year with a single car team that halfway through the season decided to close up. We don't really know what he's capable of in the type of equipment that he's getting into. He could have a monster year. We've got Chase Briscoe taking over Clint Bowyer's ride in the 14. Kevin Harvick proved that that's championship level equipment. Can he take the momentum he had in the Xfinity Series and bring it over into the Cup Series and have one of the most successful rookie seasons that we've had in the last several years? And then you look at a guy like Blaney over at Penske. You've got Austin Cindric about to enter the fold in a year from now. You got Matty D with the popularity. And Blaney is one of those guys that's been around a while now. And he's a one race a year guy, one race winner type of guy so far. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the reality when you look at his career. And we've been
he's got to be more than that this year, don't you think?
You know, I think that with Blaney, it's one of those situations where he's on a team where it's just like Joe Gibbs Racing, where he's got so much talent around him. He's got Keselowski. He's got, you know, he's got Logano that are proven champions and proven winners. And it's really hard when you're constantly stacked up against two guys that are champions. But, you know, I think that this could be a year for him, and it could start out right at Daytona because he's a great super speedway racer, you know, who just won Talladega, you know, as a guy that could break through early, clinch a spot early, and then spend the rest of the year gearing up for a more successful playoff run.
He's my pick to win the 500. Are you in my brain or something? That was kind of funky.
Yeah, that's what we do. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be interesting, and I obviously all eyes are on Bubba, and all eyes are going to are on what they can do. Although I think that making the playoffs, you know, for the new team and new single car team would be a huge accomplishment in itself. But I think you are going to see these young guys really give the older guys a run for their money. And I think that we have seen that transition happen. I mean, look at what just happened with Jimmy in the last couple of years of his career and how quickly he fell off. And, you know, it happens in the blink of an eye, and then all of a sudden the change is there. And I think we're about to see it in 2021.
What do you think of the new tracks that are on the schedule? Does anyone specifically pop out to you? COTA, Knoxville for the trucks, which I feel like a lot of people seem to be forgetting about. Road America on July 4th weekend, that's going to be a banger and a half. Indianapolis Road Course, which, as you guys listened last week, Neff absolutely despises. But there's a lot of new stuff going on the schedule this year. I think it's a welcome change. What about you?
Well, I think what's old is new again in terms of the schedule. Mm-hmm. I actually like Nashville Super Speedway coming back.
Okay.
And I was lucky enough to do a ton of Xfinity races there, cover it in the late 2000s, all the way through 2011 when it went away. And I think that that track was consistently underrated, provided some of the best finishes in the Xfinity series mm-hmm. on a year-in, year-out basis. God, this may make me an old man, but I don't know if you remember when, like, the top five basically crashed on the final lap.
Yeah.
I don't know, diapers back then. And, you know, I and then sixth place ended up winning. I think Michael Waltrip ended up winning that one.
I think so.
It was just, you know, it was crazy, the racing back then. And I really think that it provides a unique layout, 1.33 miles in length. I think that it's going to be a much better race than they expect, as long as the racetrack itself is still in pretty decent shape.
Yeah.
And the other racetrack on my agenda is the one down in Austin. It's COTA, and I think it's going to be a phenomenal event on that road course. And it's a very cool venue in terms of not knowing what to expect at all, because we really haven't been there in a stock car other than Tony Stewart taking a joyride around it. So I think it's going to be really cool to see how they handle it, and a great, great venue in a great city.
I think one of the biggest unknowns of the year is the Bristol Dirt Race, but I think a close second is probably what the hell is going to happen when all those 3,500-pound stock cars go barreling down into turn one at COTA, hang a hard left, and see who makes it through. Because it's one thing to slow a Formula One car down. It's another thing to slow a 3,500-pound NASCAR stock car down. And I don't know if it's going to go well.
Yeah, I think that's one of the big things. Even a track like Road America, which we visited a lot with the Xfinity series, it's brand new for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And when it's brand new, you run into these situations where it can be difficult. Now, at the same time, we said that so many times last year during the pandemic, and cup drivers proved that they were cup drivers. The track like the Daytona Road Course, you hop in the cars, you don't have any practice on this road course. And what do we have? A caution-free event. Devoid of any major incidents. So you just never know what you're going to get. But I do think that for some of these new tracks on the schedule, I think we're going to see some aggression. I think we're going to see people looking at these road courses as opportunities to sneak into the postseason, to grab a victory they might not get elsewhere. And I think it's going to lead to some great racing, especially in that summer track.
Tom, tell us what is on the horizon for our wonderful website that we got going, frontstretch.com, this season. Sell the people a little bit. What do we got going on the site that's different this year that people should be expecting?
Well, first difference is they're listening to you.
I don't know if that's a good thing.
Yeah. So like there's that. And then, you know, you look at some of the other like reporters that are moving up the ranks, with Dustin Albino moving over to jski.com. We have Zach Sterniolo with a once a week column on Mondays called Zach's Turn, where some of the best drivers in the sport are going to stop by and talk with him. Daniel McFadden has come over from NBC Sports, and he's doing a column on Tuesdays and doing some additional content with us. We're really excited about it. Dustin may be popping up every now and then, and we still have some of the staples that people know, like Two-Headed Monster, the weekly debate column that's consistently one of our most read columns, our interview feature on Wednesdays, where drivers like Trevor Bayne, Natalie Decker have stopped by and opened up in a way that they haven't opened up really anywhere else. And I would expect for us to continue breaking news like we always do on the ARCA side, on the truck side, Xfinity and Cup, because that's what we're known for. 12% growth last year. I look forward to continued growth in the midst of all the challenges and bringing the best racing journalism that we possibly can to fans like listening right now.
To the moon.
Yeah, something like that.
And you personally, what's in the works on the website for you? I know you've written a column every now and then for the last handful of years, and everybody loves reading you. And since you run the site, you can pretty much do whatever you want. So tell the people what you want to be doing this year.
Yeah, well, I am going to be writing Did You Notice again on Wednesdays. And my first column is going to be about unity in the sport during a time of disunity.
Love it.
And about the many challenges that we face. Looking back at all of the crazy stuff that NASCAR went through over the last year, you think about it, Davey. I mean, more happened in a year than typically happens in 10 years in the sport. And so much happened off the racetrack with racial justice, with the Confederate flag ban, you know, that changed the shape of the sport for years to come and may change the landscape of the fans that go back into the stands once the stands fully open again for everybody to come and sit. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that, and still going to pop up on the radio and going to pop up at a certain national website near you. We will see by the time this podcast comes out, you will see where I pop up, and you know, I'll give you a clue. It's a 3-letter word.
That's what we call a tease in the biz, Tom. Is that right?
Yeah. And I'm really looking forward to that, and looking forward to getting back to riding on a national stage. And, you know, I think that 2021, the future is bright for Front Stretch. I'm really glad everybody's listening right now, and we've got some of the best young talent in the biz, and I'm lucky to have them. So, you know, onward and upward for this website and for this sport as we head into the coming year. I think, you know, it's not the only generational change that's happening around here that's happening down on the racetrack. A little generational change happening here at Front Stretch too.
Spoken like a true champ and the true wonderful person you are. Tom, thanks for talking about the offseason with me. Stick around if you would for a sec, because we got to get a quick stage break out of the way. And we're going to be back to talk with Justin Marks, new team owner for Trackhouse Racing. And then we're going to talk a little bit of Daytona 500. So stick around, okay?
Sounds good.
Time for a quick pit stop under this stage break. And this week's episode and or stage break is brought to you by, as I said last week, nobody right now, but I have in my notes, your company here. Advertising is open on the Front Stretch Podcast across all multimedia platforms. Contact our sales manager, Kevin Deedy. His email is deadyk37@gmail.com. Do you want to attach your wonderful brand to me, Tom Bowles, anybody else on this wonderful website? We have a slew of writers that have insane talent. If you want to attach yourself to any of those writers, this face, this voice, I don't know why, but if you want to, contact Kevin Deedy, deadyk37@gmail.com. Let's throw it over to our chat with new Cup Series team owner, Justin Marks for Trackhouse Racing. And you guys probably know Justin's name because he's been around the block a time or two. He's driven in the Xfinity Series, run up front, had a lot of success in his career as a driver, but now he's transitioning into a different stratosphere in the sport as an owner. And I'll tell you something, this chat was eye-opening for me on a couple levels because he is trying to revolutionize, and I mean that in every sense of the word, NASCAR team ownership with Trackhouse. You know, you hear about people being fans of a Kevin Harvick or Ryan Blaney or Chase Elliott. Justin Marks wants fans not to just become fans of Daniel Suarez, but he wants them to become Trackhouse fans. That hasn't been done in NASCAR recently, and he's trying to buck the trend and mold that to his own. So we talked about a lot of things, his feelings of when the Daytona 500 is finally here, as it is this week, and what those feelings are going to be as the car rolls off the truck for the first time and he sees those colors hitting the racetrack. He's going to have a wonderful, well-deserved beverage watching the 500. And he genuinely is really excited to see where this team's going to go, especially when you have Pitbull on board. We're going to talk about his relationship with Mr. Worldwide himself. So I'll get out of the way and let you guys hear from new Cup Series team owner for Trackhouse Racing, Justin Marks. Pleasure today to welcome on owner of Trackhouse Racing and a new Cup Series owner at that, Justin Marks. I actually want to start off with a question about your driver because I see you got a little Daniel Amigos swag going on. Love that.
Yeah, this was my first piece of official Daniel Suarez swag that I got just the other day. So, it's been great working with Daniel. I mean, he's very hungry, and very focused and dedicated. And you know, that's great because I think that, you know, sometimes teams place so much emphasis on their processes and their technology and their engineering and their cars. And there's always this battle between driver and owner, right? It's just sort of like, well, you know, owner's expectations, you know, driver's expectations, these kinds of things. But, you know, for me, I've always maintained the fact that it's just simple. The driver is the most important part of this entire equation. If you don't have a guy sitting in the seat that can get the job done and is driven and focused and dedicated, then all the work that you're doing just doesn't matter. And I believe Daniel's that guy, and he's so far been proving so.
It's very well said. And I got to say, you, Pitbull, Armando, whatever we want to call him, Daniel, you guys have all been like extremely well-spoken in the past few months. And you specifically, you've had a busy past few weeks, month or so. Let's go over the little cliff notes. January 15th, you announced Pitbull joining on as a partner with Trackhouse. And then February 4th, which was yesterday as of this recording, you get announced on the board of the Music City Grand Prix with one Justin Timberlake. You're just flexing all over us. Like, I don't even know what to say.
Well, I mean, look, I've been doing this a long time. I mean, I've been in this game for, you know, 20 years, just over 20 years. And you know, a lot of time as a driver, obviously, but it's always been an ambition of mine to really build a legacy. And, you know, I think the timing was right in the last, you know, 2 years to really start pulling back from at least professional racing. Uh-huh. and start, you know, committing to the rest of it, because, you know, I just took a step back and I looked at all of the major stakeholders in this industry, not just NASCAR, but in the entire motorsports industry in the United States. And a lot of the guys that have a lot of influence and control a lot of properties are at the end of their careers. And, you know, that next generation of people that are going to build true motorsports businesses and empires, those people need to start doing that work now. And I'm not yet 40. And I just felt like, you know, the time is right to start making those moves. So, you know, I've got some friends that I've known for a long time that have been working very hard over the past 4 or 5 years to put the Music City Grand Prix together and finally able to get the agreement done with IndyCar and with the city of Nashville. And so it's an honor to be a part of that, to make the investment of that, because I really believe in that vision. And it's going to be an incredible event. I think it's going to be one of the crown jewels of American motorsport events for a number of reasons. That's a whole rabbit hole there. But, you know, the Trackhouse, getting back to Trackhouse, I mean, you know, the vision of that team is to just try to do things different, is to try to really cultivate a fan following and be a popular team in the sport, not yep. just tied to the driver, but to be a team brand that people are fans of. There's not a lot of teams that have been able to do that. And I wanted to build something that's more like a stick and ball sport, where people just take a lot of pride in whatever their team is, regardless of who's playing for it and who comes and goes. And, you know, over the years, That's the grand vision of Trackhouse. That, coupled with the fact that, you know, we really want to be storytellers and we want to tell compelling stories. We want to be active in the communities. We want to empower young people. We want to use motorsport as a platform to try to make some good happen in the world and in the country. And that aligns so well with what Armando is trying to do and doing in his career with his slam schools and the message in his music and his philanthropic efforts and his entrepreneurial efforts. So, I mean, it just fits so well. It's almost serendipitous. It just came together quickly, authentically. He's been a great partner. But yeah, I you know, I think what everybody is seeing right just in the last month is just sort of like the tip of the iceberg. It's not all happening just right now. I mean, this has been work that's been happening for a long time. It's just nice to see it come together.
And it shows, because, you know, the proof is in the pudding, and a lot of things are preparation. A lot of things are opportunity. You now have the opportunity to perform because of the preparation that you guys have made. Now, I want to stick on the aspect of what you touched on, making Trackhouse kind of like a stick and ball sport type of thing. I know you have visions of having the team based in Nashville, making it an identity tied to the city. You obviously have close ties down there as well. That specific idea within Trackhouse, and we'll get to STEM and all the other ideologies in a minute. Where did that specific idea come from of creating it as a culture rather than just a race team?
Well, I mean, look, when the very first thing that happened was, I had been making it known inside the industry with whoever would listen that, you know, NASCAR has an opportunity, that NASCAR was on a trajectory that was just unsustainable, and that, you know, they have to find a way to make these teams more sports enterprises rather than technology companies. This all started in 2016. I was racing for Chip Ganassi Racing in the Xfinity series. And I walked into the shop one day and I looked up the second floor and I looked in the fab shop and I looked at engineering and I went, this isn't a race team. This is a manufacturing corporation. And we're all struggling to find sponsors because we're spending millions and millions of dollars designing and manufacturing and research and engineering research development. Right. All that. So man, if this sport could get to more of a stick and ball model where it's a sports enterprise and it's about the athletes and it's about the people and the performance of those people, then I think it's a compelling property and one that I would be interested in pursuing. But at the time, Barney Visser was spending $30 million a year. And it was an arms race between the OEMs and who would spend tens of millions of dollars more than the next guy. And it wasn't feasible. Anyway, so when they go to the new car, you know, my antenna went up and went, okay, if this is truly what they say it's going to be, then this is that opportunity, right? To where the success or failure of an enterprise is going to be really deeply connected to the talent of the people, to the culture, to building cohesiveness, because you don't have to worry about, I just don't have the money to build the same spindles that Penske has. Yep. We're all getting them from the same place. So it's going to be about the people. Obviously, technology, sim, aero, that stuff will all still be a part of it. So when that all started, I went, okay, we're going to start a cup team. Let's look at what a cup team is and what a cup team should be. And if you just had a blank, you know, sheet of paper, which we had, how would you build a race team? Forget about anything you know about racing. Forget about anything you know about how Ganassi works or how Hendrick works or any stuff. Let's just start over. Forget about all that stuff and just look at it. What would it be? And it became very clear that if you're going to build a race team that is representative of the future, that is consistent with consumer behavior, with demographics, with the social media movement, with how young people identify authenticity and find authenticity, then it can't be Justin Marks Racing. And it has to be a brand. It has to be something that is bigger than the owner, is bigger than any one person, that is a movement and an idea. And Red Bull kind of did this, right? Like 10 years ago or whatever it was. But I mean, it just wasn't the right time because it, you know, for obvious reasons. So I mean, that was sort of the impetus. And it's like, okay. And then, you know, really put the vision together of building something that connects authentically with people, that builds a brand that people go like, I'm a member of the Trackhouse fan base. I'm excited about what they're doing. And that means, you know, it's, you know, obviously being competitive on the racetrack, but it means partnering with people like Armando. It means rethinking apparel. It means, you know, a social presence, content that we put out there that looks different, that's compelling and emotional and all that. And those are all just the pieces. And, you know, that's that right there in a nutshell is just sort of the whole vision and business design of Trackhouse. Long-winded answer for you, but it's important to understand why we're doing what we're doing.
100%. And I apologize for this generic question, but it's really one that I'm curious of. Your vision that you just outlined, how do you make that happen? Because it's one thing to say it. It's another thing to put the pieces into motion, get the driver, get the sponsors on board, get the initiatives out there. And you obviously know it's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen in 2-3 years, right? The next gen, next gen coming in is going to help. No doubt about that. Yep. And results on the track with Daniel, that will help. No doubt about that. But to get this vision to go where you want it to, how do you make that happen? What steps do you take on a day-to-day basis? Do you have goals set for 5-10 years down the road? How does this conglomerate that is going to be Trackhouse, how does that come together?
Well, there's some luck involved for sure before I take any kind of credit. But I mean, a big part of it is people. I mean, it was really important to make sure that I aligned with people that had a lot of experience, had a lot of talent, and understood what the mission was. And that started with Ty Norris. And that started with getting somebody like Ty and saying, you need to be my soldier on this and you need to fight for this for me every day, because here's a guy that, you know, built and ran DEI, built and ran MWR, you know, has done sponsorship deals, you know, he's managed people, he knows everybody in the industry, he's been in NASCAR, you know, through a number of transitional phases. Yeah. He was working in Nashville at the time, working on some mute placing brands with music artists and all that. So that was a huge part of it, because then I had somebody that then I didn't have to go out and learn how to do everything. Right. I mean, he just said, here's how we need to sort of proceed. And I'll fight for this vision. I'll pursue this vision. And then it was like driver. And we wanted Daniel, I wanted Daniel really bad. And at the time, and maybe this is luck, maybe this is salesmanship, maybe it's just him identifying with my plan and trusting me. But, you know, at the time, he had offers to drive for some pretty big deals that he all turned down to come drive for us. And I think that when I talked about what I wanted to accomplish, he just decided that he was going to trust it and jump in there. And then, you know, and then our operational partner with RCR, you know, it was very important to me to have a close working relationship with an existing team. Mm-hmm. So I could slot right into fab shops and engineering and, you know, personnel and some front office and things like that. So I didn't have to figure out how to build race cars in our first year, especially the last year of the current gen car.
Yep.
And we got that in RCR. So you put those three pieces together, got Ty Norris, Daniel Suarez, and RCR sort of helping us from a competition standpoint. That's like, you know, that was most of the game right there. Mm-hmm. So, so since then it's just been like, you know, tree by tree by tree in this giant forest, just sort of, you know, blocking and tackling, like making sure that these little things are done, staying honest to the vision. But I've got really, really good people. I've gotten lucky. You asked about, you know, the future. You're right in the fact that, you know, it's not lost on me that that Trackhouse and Suarez and Armando are taking up a lot of the media bandwidth right now leading into Daytona. And there's going to be a lot of eyes on us, and it's going to be an exercise in managing expectations. I mean, you know, it's for us to look at that side of it and go like, man, we're going to go down there and win the race, and we're going to make the chase, and we're going to figure out how to get to the second, you know, like that.
It would be great,
but let's take a step back and remember that we're racing against Stuart Haas Racing and Joe Gibbs Racing and Penske and Hendrick and on all these guys. So, you know, I tell the guys in the shop and on the pit crew, it's like, you know, it's just about execution. It's about winning the day. It's about getting better every day. And I don't have expectations this year that I have, like, look, it's going to be a failure if we don't finish top 20 in points, or it's going to be a failure if we don't make the chase. We're not in a position to be putting those sorts of goals on the board. Mm-hmm. I think it's like, you know, grow our communication structure, you know, pit crew, work hard, get a little bit better every day. You know, Daniel and the mechanics, let's work hard to figure out how to make the cars a little bit better every week. And those kind of results we'll take. But make no mistake, my goal with starting this race team is to win the NASCAR Cup Championship. If that takes 5 years, if it takes 8 years, but that is the goal. I'm not doing this to try to just have fun or hang out with Pitbull in Miami. Yeah. Like, I'm not, it's, you know what I mean? So I'm doing this because I want to win races and win championships. And as I mentioned at the top of the call, you know, the ownership base in the sports at the end of their careers, somebody is going to have to build the race team of the next decades. And mm-hmm. It might as well be us. Why not us?
Because sounds more, but Roger Penske, Jack Roush, they're not going to be here forever. Neither is Rick Hendrick. Neither is Gene Haas. You know what I mean? And you're in it now. Pitbull's with you. Danny Hamlin's in it now. MJ's with him. Matt Tift and BJ McLeod are together in it now. So that's a good thing. And I'm glad you pointed that out. Like, that's very concrete. Your goal is to win cup championships, because I'm not going to lie, a couple times when I've heard you talk and read some articles, you are so incredibly passionate about reaching more people, and specifically different demographics that NASCAR has not reached over the last 10, 20 years with the STEM initiatives and whatnot, that obviously you guys want to win. And I was going to ask, like, what is your guys' main goal? What is your priority? Is it to reach more people, or is it to win races? But you answer that right there, because they don't have to be two different things. They can be together, and they go hand in hand.
Well, look, the way that I think about it is, you know, we are not building a race team that markets itself. We're building a marketing company that races. And, you know, I go back to something like Elon Musk. They asked Elon Musk, you know, why Tesla? Why build Tesla? Why electric cars? He says, I didn't set out to build the best car company in the world. He said, I set out to build the best company in the world. And I just happened to be, I believe, in EVs. And so I kind of think about Trackhouse like that. Like, you know, when I think of it more, it may sound ambiguous. It may, you know, but it's, you know, I want to build a marketing platform and a company that truly connects with people deeply and On a number of different levels. And that might be, that's through the excitement of race cars at 200 miles an hour. It's through empowering minority youth communities and educating them on STEM disciplines and opportunities in their life. It's sort of everything in between, apparel lines and like lifestyle brands and storytelling and all this, and building it in a way where if a company wants to come into the sport of NASCAR to promote a product or a service, Trackhouse is the place they got to be. Period, because of all these things that we're doing. So we want to build an enterprise here that is truly the most compelling and valuable and viable partnership for companies that want to market and promote in the sport. And, you know, I also believe, and this is where, you know, Armando and I are just so, so closely connected, is that we're living in a world now where it is not a responsibility, but a requirement for companies in America to be doing something to empower the next generation, to be doing something to make their communities better, to try to like make life as Americans better, however small it can be, right? If it's the sandwich shop on the corner, give out a free sandwich a week to a family in need. If it's Amazon.com, give away $5 billion to educational initiatives in the cities that you're set up in, like, and everything in between. And so, And I truly believe in that. And that's what we're doing as Trackhouse. So, I mean, I think in the next couple of weeks after the 500, we'll roll out kind of what that looks like. We're in the planning stages of it right now. I'm really, really excited about it. But I mean, you asked just holistically what Trackhouse is. It's just, I want to build the next great motorsports company.
Well said. I want to be conscious of your time, so I'll ask one final question. It could be real quick.
I love talking about this stuff, man.
I know, man. I know. And we'll have to get back together and linked up, because I really want to delve deeper into it, because not to blow smoke, I really think you're now the most well-thought, well-versed owner in the Cup Series now. I just love listening to you speak and how passionate you are about it. But when the car rolls off at Daytona here in a few days and you see that number 99, paint schemes are fire, by the way, all year long. What are the emotions going to be? Is it relief, excitement? Are you in disbelief? One word, what's going to be?
Relief. I mean, because for a number of reasons. I mean, one is that it's just been a tremendous amount of work. It's just been a tremendous amount of work putting all the pieces in place. And I'm a racer, so it's going to be nice to get to the point where we can really focus on racing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can see the results on a weekly basis of the effort that you put in. You know, we're also, when we're talking to partners and we're talking to like people, NASCAR to Fox and NBC, about all the stakeholders, everybody, about things we want to do, we're still just talking about an idea. Like, we haven't done anything yet. And so going to Daytona is gonna be like, you know, now we're going to be able to put, you know, we're going to be able to, the proof's in the pudding. Like, we're going to be able to like be in the game every week. So it's like relevant. We're not just going to be talking about what we're going to do. It's like, we are doing it. So it's just relief. It's relief that all the hard work was worth it. And now we're not building, we're operating. We're still building, but we're racing. And so it's going to be awesome. I mean, I have been so in the weeds on this thing for so long that when that race starts, I am going to sit on top of my motorhome with a beer in my hand, and I'm going to just be a race fan for 3 hours. And I'm going to cheer on the 99 car, just like all of our fans and all of our partners are too. And it's going to just be a great day.
Well, let me say, on behalf of everybody listening and watching, you deserve that beer, and have one on the fans and on me, because you deserve it. It's well deserved, obviously, and it's been a joy talking to you. Seriously, I'm really looking forward to see what you guys have in store, and really looking forward to hearing from you and talking to you throughout the year. Because, like I said, your passion shines through clear as day, and the sport needs more people like you. So I think the sport overall is better off for having you in it. So I thank you for your time today.
I appreciate that. Anytime.
Thanks to Drew Brown with Trackhouse Racing Communications and Justin for his time. Obviously, hope it was an eye-opening chat for you guys, because for myself personally, I learned a lot, and I came away from that thinking, this guy's got his stuff together, if you know what I mean. So it was fun to hear from him, and I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. With that being said, one lap to go, one kind of segment to go. Throw the white flag out, and I'd like to welcome back my boy Tom Bowles to get his thoughts, not just on the season, but the great American race, the granddaddy of them all when it comes to stock car racing, the Daytona 500. Tom, can you believe it's here? Are you happy? Are you excited? Do you wish you had a little bit more time in the off season?
very weird to not be there. That's why it doesn't really feel real. You'll be down there covering it for us. But it's going to be the first one since 2006 that I'm missing. And a lot of people are missing because of the pandemic. So it's just really strange. And it's so weird to think that a year ago, then President Trump was down in the middle of the infield, like giving a huge speech, and coronavirus, and people didn't even know what that was really yet in a lot of circles. And it's just a completely different environment from which we're starting the 2021 season. But I still think Daytona is going to have that pizzazz. I still think it's going to be a great race. And look at the super speedway races that we had last year, Daytona and Talladega. They were some of the best super speedway racing, I'd argue, that we'd had in over a decade. And if Ryan Newman didn't have that near tragic crash in the last lap of Daytona, people would be talking about what a heck of a finish that 500 was. So I think we're in for another barn burner, and I think 2021 will start the same way.
I think you're right, and I'm sure NASCAR hopes you're right, but we got a ton of storylines going into the race. I mean, Denny's going for three in a row. That's never been done before. That's ridiculous that this is even a possibility. And he has a really good shot of doing it because he's the odds-on favorite in Vegas to win. He's 8-1. He got Ryan Newman returning from the crash that happened last year that we thought he died. It's an amazing storyline that he's not just back here, but he's back here racing and competing and has a 1-in-40 shot, just like everybody else, to win the Great American Race. I'm excited to see how this race plays out on the racetrack, but off is going to be a different thing. And I want to transition into something else. Fox Sports is obviously broadcasting the race as they do every single year, since 2001, that is. And they put out an advertisement in the offseason billing this as the best season ever. It was a pretty clever ad. I liked it. I think you saw it too, Tom. And I'm curious to see how they are going to handle their portion of the season, because there's a lot of hype behind this, on track and off. And when you call something the best season ever, of course, some of it is selling and you want to, you know, promote things, especially Fox does well having WWE rights too. But when you have Michael Jordan involved, Bubba Wallace becoming the figure that he is now, Pitbull, he's the honorary starter of the Daytona 500. This could be a big opportunity for Fox to have a lot more unique eyeballs that they don't usually have on a NASCAR race at Daytona, especially because of the pandemic. People are at home, especially because of the renewed sense of optimism and progressiveness that NASCAR has taken in their stances the last 6, 7, 8 months. I think there's a real opportunity here for Fox to knock it out of the ballpark and show new viewers why NASCAR's cool again.
Yeah, I think that's really a good point. And you look at the Fox talent over the last couple of years, people forget how much has changed. You know, with the Waltrips, Daryl retiring and Michael having much less of an influence over there, with the way Chris Myers, Jeff Hammond are no longer doing the pre-race show, the way in which there's a studio now in Charlotte, and Jamie McMurray has a larger role, and Bobby Labonte and some of the different talent that has run through there, Fox has really changed the way in which they present the race. And now you bring in Clint Boyer, a guy that's never really been afraid. If there's a column this week you want to read on Front Stretch, it's Brian Gable going back and talking about Clint Boyer and how he's always been outspoken throughout his NASCAR career. And he takes that into the booth. A lot of times people feel like analysts are just so connected, Jeff Gordon connected to Hendrick, or people connected to their different investments in the sport. And so they don't say what it's supposed, they don't tell it like it is, right? And people think Clint will tell it like it is and will give you that honest opinion, good or bad, that could bring other people into the sport and be like a mini Dale Earnhardt Jr., be a talent that actually has people coming back to listen to him a little bit.
Who's your pick? I'm putting you on the spot. I told you Blaney's my pick. He's been my pick for the last couple of weeks. Who's yours?
Yeah, Blaney is a good one. I know I'm going to have to be different. So I actually am going to go with somebody that has been underrated and is still looking for a first 500. Keselowski's got this on his bucket list. Mm-hmm. And he's been so good at Talladega, not so great at Daytona. Yeah. Sometime soon, Lady Luck has to turn in his direction. And after a really strong 2020, I'm going to pick the two car to come out of the box strong and grab his first 500.
Team Penske did not pay us to say those things, I promise.
Checkered flag, here I come.
Let's drop the checkered flag on the Front Stretch Pod this week. Tom, this is actually your idea, this little segment here in the final stage of the podcast. Davies, do's, and don'ts. So last week I gave you some do's and don'ts for the Clash. I hope you took those to heart. This week, I'm going to give you my do's and don'ts as well. Going off of our predictions, Tom picked Brad to win the 500. I picked Blaney. My do is to watch the Penske cars, because if you count Matt DiBenedetto, you may have five of them at some points in this race huddled all together. Austin Cindric's trying to make the race. You add Keselowski, Blaney, Logano, and then Matt DiBenedetto. That is five Penske-affiliated race cars with Roush Yates engines under the hood. And God, they are really good at super speedways, and I wouldn't be surprised to see any of them up front. My don't is to hang back and avoid the big one. I'm a proponent of that you want to try to lead as many laps as you can, not just to get stage points, but to see what your car can do when it's in competitive spots in the race. And if you hang back and you try to avoid the big one, then you're just setting yourself up for trouble, because you're not putting your car in places where it has the ability to maneuver and see what it's going to do up front where you need to be to win the race. So those are my do's and don'ts. Tom, your thoughts.
First of all, I may change my pick between now and Sunday, because the more I think about it, Matty D was clearly my backup pick.
Feel good pick.
Let's take some numbers for a second, right? Number 21 car in 2021, mm-hmm. 10 years after one of the biggest upsets of the century, Trevor Bayne.
I actually heard that today. That's a good point.
Yep. And what would it be for the Woods? Career win number 100.
Yep.
In the 500, all those numbers. So if you see me pop up and change to Matty D, you'll know why. But I think that you're right on point in terms of hanging back. You don't see LeBron just get down by 20 and stop trying until the fourth quarter of an NBA game.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times we've seen people getting bitten recently by hanging back in these restrictor plates. And you're damned if you do, I think. You're damned if you don't. So why not go out there and lead a bunch of laps? And I think that that's important. Now, in terms of my do's and don'ts for the 500, you do watch the duels this year. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be one of the most competitive duels in the history of, you know, the last 10, 15 years. So many good cars trying to make the race for just four spots. And don't get off to a fast start in the first stage. So often we've seen the people that have led the first 50-100 laps of the 500, they're nowhere to be found at the finish. I know I just kind of contradicted myself a little bit. You don't want to hang back, but I don't think the early contender in the 500 is going to be the one that ran the last 10 laps.
Okay. Well, I'll take those to heart. I hope our listeners do too. My lock of the week is Ricky Stenhouse Jr. wrecking somebody, because that's bound to happen. And also, Joey Logano making somebody mad because he's blocking either below the yellow line or above it, or potentially causing a big one. So I know that's not really crazy thinking at super speedways, but I just feel like that's a lock to happen. All right. Let's go through some other quick matchups, Tom. I'm going to give you matchups. You tell me who you think's going to finish better. We'll do some quick, rapid-fire ones. These are hypothetical because they haven't been posted yet, but usually each week we'll have ones that are actually posted on some sports books. So I'm going to run through them. You ready?
Go ahead.
Brad or Joey, who's going to finish higher?
Well, man, I would have to really screw myself if I pick Joey here, right? So I will say this. Logano had top five or top 10 finishes 2016 through 2019 in the 500. Mm-hmm. Consistently runs well here in the spring edition. I think that he'll be strong, but I think Brad obviously is going to be a little bit better.
Sticking with the Penske theme, Matty D or Austin Cindric if he makes the show?
I think Matty D is the dark horse pick to win this race. And keep in mind that with the 95 car a couple of years ago, led 49 laps race high before taking out a wreck late. I think he's primed to be in position to win this type of race. And man, what better way to start 2022 silly season off than by the most available free agent right now winning the Daytona 500.
Stewart Haas Racing, Kevin Harvick or Eric Almirola?
So Harvick is hit or miss at the super speedways, as great as he's been at all the other racetracks. And you look at a guy like Eric, won here in 2014, driving for Richard Petty Motorsports.
Almost won the 500.
Count on for a good top 10 finish. I actually am going to go with Eric.
I am as well. Denny Hamlin going for three in a row, or my pick, Ryan Blaney. That's tough.
That is tough. And getting back to where you were earlier in the podcast, Denny ain't got no respect. It's amazing. People say Ricky Stenhouse Jr. is a great plate racer. This guy just won two straight Daytona 500s. No one ever talks about Denny on Daytona and Talladega. It's crazy. Oh, yeah, I'm going to go with Ricky Stenhouse, who has, what, made all of one career playoff appearance in these races over Denny. That said, Lady Luck tends to bite you at Daytona and Talladega after a while. And so only because of the law of averages, I think I'm going to lean towards Blaine.
All right, I will as well. I think the streak is going to end for Denny this year. Well, there you go. That's the checkered flag on the Front Stretch podcast for this week. Tom, thank you for joining me, my friend. It's been fun to get your thoughts on the 2021 season and the Daytona 500. We'll be keeping it locked to frontstretch.com to read your columns, and you can follow him on Twitter at NASCAR Bulls. Is that correct?
That's right. And you know what's going to be different about this week? I'm actually going to start tweeting again. So, like, it's worth following me. No, but seriously, I'm really looking forward to the season. And, you know, you got to follow all the great Front Stretch writers, you know, Davey at Davey Center and, you know, Mike Massey at M_Massey22, our content director. So many great things are going to happen the next few days. Tune into Front Stretch every day. There's something cool, something new, something you haven't learned before.
Front Stretch Podcast Episode 2. That's over, but Stock Car Scoop, keep it locked on this feed for more content this week. Keep it locked on the website all week long for more coverage from Daytona. And until next week, stay safe, stay inside, keep washing those hands, and we'll see you back here for the best seat at the track on the Front Stretch Pod.